This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Julian Ng. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday the 29th of January, and we're midway through yet again another week. How are you both this morning? Julian, it's the first time we've had you in studio since Chinese New Year, so happy Chinese New Year.
Happy Chinese New Year to you guys and to everybody.
Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. I'm sure that everybody would agree that this year's Chinese New Year would seem a little bit more subdued, and that's fine with me. I enjoyed it, actually.
You found it subdued because of the coronavirus or just people being more mindful about how they spend money? Because, you know, there's talk that the economy isn't the best, in the best shape,
I didn't even go that far in my analysis. It just felt quiet.
Sorry. I was just wearing my fund manager hat for a moment.
Yeah.
It was just
for a
visceral
moment.
Feeling. Because that's what I was doing. I was going to the malls and like looking at whether people were shopping, whether they were carrying like paper bags. What was the share of profit for the mall? Sorry, guys.
Oh,
can't
goodness.
Help it.
Xiaoning. You should get a life.
Do you actually calculate the share of profit from the mall for the mall from how many bags you see?
It's an indication. Yeah, it's an indication whether the REIT will do better, because that's always the something you can't forecast so accurately. So yeah, I do. I'm sorry, I can't help it.
I'm giving you a bit of a strange look.
Yeah,
right
I know
now.
You are. But that's, you know, what to do. It's all about the money.
To be expected, I guess, right, Julian?
Yeah, I just don't know what to say. Except for Happy New Year.
Yes, go pay for joy to you too, Julian.
Exactly. Okay, well, glad you had a good weekend, Julian. But of course, it is back to the work week for most of us already. So to keep you company on your morning drive, we do have lots of things lined up this morning. What are we going to be talking about?
Well, we have this very extensive report on what you can or cannot eat to save the environment. I'm sure that's something that we all are interested in.
And I'll be talking about Goldman Sachs, the one and only investment banker, and what they're trying to do for diversity.
All right, and if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're going to be talking about travelling and how to do that if you happen to be a germaphobe. So be sure to stay tuned at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Ready for Love by Bad Company, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Xiaoning and Julian. Now, recently, with all of the fears of the coronavirus flying around, I think a lot of people are hesitant over traveling, just because traveling can put you in rather a lot of crowded places. So airports, airplanes, train stations, bus terminals, they're all full of crowds, and you tend to be very skeptical going into it of how clean everything is. So you worry that being exposed to those crowds will mean that you are exposed to all kinds of germs and bugs and bacteria and possibly viruses as well. But there is an article in Lonely Planet also dated about 9 days ago that talks about how to travel if you are, in general, a germaphobe, and some of the practices that the author of the article goes through. So things like she talks about how when she travels, her default perfume is the smell of disinfectant. It's an interesting article. I mean, it goes through some of the basics, like disinfecting your seat and your tables on trains, and it talks about how to avoid a flight sickness, and it's a good list, I think. But it depends on how much do you actually use these kinds of tips.
Some of them make a lot of sense. I mean, it's not only just about the germs, but it's like how to avoid getting food poisoning when you travel, which unfortunately does happen to all of us, I think, at least once in our lifetime when we are on holiday. I think it's just basically exposure to new bugs, right? Because when you go to a foreign place, you're just not used to the water. And yes, you can be careful. This is the food poisoning bit. You can be careful and say you're only going to drink bottled water. But nonetheless, there will be some contamination, mm-hmm. right? Whether it is from just the simple things like brushing your teeth. And sometimes it gives you the runs, unfortunately, which can spoil your holiday. But to me, it's always just be practical and sensible, and don't let that stop you from, you know, going around the world and trying new things and seeing new things.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there is enough information in this article, because if you search for the word corona, which is incidentally not the beer that we are referring to, but the virus, right? It's not found anywhere on the article. And the number of cases that have gone up just overnight from Tuesday to Wednesday is very alarming, because 2,800 something now to over 4,000 cases. And the fear of whether that is transmittable from human to human, which means that it can spread within where you are, right? Not just from animal to human, where you can sort of fix it by quarantining the suspected case. So a lot of the stuff that's set in here, I think it makes sense, because it's very... a lot of the virus is actually harmless and they wouldn't survive on surfaces for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you're facing an existential threat from something like the coronavirus, then I think you've got to take extra steps, like for example, wearing certain gloves or even not traveling. Not traveling would be one of them.
Yeah, I think when you are in a situation where you are concerned over being exposed to pathogens or to bacteria by traveling, then, you know, it does make sense to stay at home, because that's the easiest way for you to avoid all of that, right? But I was also actually reading an article in a Foreign Policy written by an AFP photojournalist who has covered outbreaks and is covering the coronavirus outbreak in China. He came up with his list of how to avoid getting sick. And it was things like being extremely careful about what you touch. So it's not just about wearing the right kind of mask, because after a while, you know, if you wear a mask for, say, the same mask for 2 days, it can get kind of rather slimy and rather gross. And it is actually a breeding ground for bacteria in and of itself. So
yeah, actually, this article says that most masks don't help.
Yeah, so he says that as well. But instead, he advises washing your hands very regularly, wearing gloves almost at all times if possible, opening doors with your elbows and avoiding door handles. And if you are in a house which you share with other people, so even with your family, he actually recommends getting separate towel sets for each person, embroidering their name on it and saying, as long as this outbreak is going on, nobody use any towel but your own.
But we had some practical tips yesterday, right, from Dr. Suresh, who is in charge of the Sungai Buloh, the coronavirus at Sungai Buloh, right? And he did give us the most practical advice, is to wash your hands regularly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Masks don't necessarily work. But at the same time, don't panic. I mean, don't be alarmist about all this. I think this too shall pass, you know, that's the famous saying. But it shouldn't stop you from traveling. And if you just use some practical common sense, and one of which is to avoid China for the moment, but the rest of the world is okay. That was his advice yesterday. I think just be sensible about things.
Yes, exercise reasonable precautions. But do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are heading into a few messages for you, and then we'll be taking a look at the carbon footprint of the meals you eat. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Wake Up by Arcade Fire, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shunning and Julian. Now, when it comes to the environment, a lot of people are becoming more environmentally conscious nowadays. One of the pieces of advice that you get given if you want to be environmentally conscious about the food you consume is to eat local. But there's a new article out, and based on data that has been compiled, and this is, you can find it on the Our World in Data website by the University of Oxford. And it talks about how actually the more important thing to consider is not where your food has been sourced, whether or not you did buy it from a local homegrown greengrocer or what have you. It's actually what you consume, because they looked at the greenhouse gas emissions across the supply chains for different kinds of food, from beef to lamb to fish to milk and root vegetables and nuts. And they actually did find that meat products can produce by far more greenhouse gas emissions than almost any other plant-based derivative. And in fact, nuts produce a negative greenhouse gas emissions because they store carbon.
Yeah, if you look at they really break it down into various contributors of environmental harm. And if you look through some of those categories, transportation is actually very small in terms of causing harm to the environment. And in fact, a lot of our policy, which is really focusing on not using a lot of plastic bag, you know, bringing your own, the packaging is also a very small contributor to environmental harm. And greenhouse gases, as you said, is one of the biggest thing. And, you know, all the things that you love, all the things that you love eating are bad for the environment. Your steak, chocolates, cheeses, dairy, you know,
they're all coffee.
Oh my goodness.
Coffee is the one that I think I'll have the hardest time giving up, right? Because it's like one, two, three, it's like six on the list.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Right. What are we going to do? Julian, normally you say it's the end of the world, but when I see this, it really feels like the end of the world.
I drink tons of coffee.
Yeah. I may not eat a lot of beef and lamb, but I confess, coffee is the one thing on this list that I think I'll have quite a tough time giving up. The other one is eggs. Even eggs is quite high on this list. So what's
beef
left for us?
Beef is on the charts, though. Beef is just like miles ahead of everything else.
Yes. So this all comes down to our farming systems, right? So beef is off the charts partly because beef is derived from cows, and cows are ruminants. So they produce methane, which is also a greenhouse gas. So carbon dioxide is not the only greenhouse gas
cow
out
fart,
there.
Basically.
Yes, we can go with that. So greenhouse gas emissions are a huge problem when it comes to... So methane production from beef farming is a huge issue, but also it's also the land use change. So the deforestation that comes about as a result of having to adapt that land to suit the animals that you are grazing on it. It's also land use change also talks about the soil changes come about as a result of having several hundred of the same animal
less biodiversity,
on the same spot.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Taking away the biodiversity.
And there has been research previously to show that factory farming is actually extremely harmful for the environment, not just in that one or 2 acres where the factory farm is located, but for the surrounding area. Because, for example, chicken farms, you know, the waste product from the chickens will move into the soil, and that will move into the water, and that will, as a result, that will move into our diets at the end of the day, because we consume fish that happen to be swimming in the rivers.
But what do we do, guys?
So you can eat nuts. Now, nuts is very interesting. Nuts are at the bottom of the list because nuts actually is a net gain for the environment, because by planting the trees, they actually sequester a lot of the carbon. So nuts actually have that negative effect on carbon footprint. Very interesting. But I don't think you can eat more than a handful of nuts per meal.
No,
it wouldn't be good for your body as well.
When you look at this list, it does suggest that if anything, if you want to be environmentally conscious, is to have a more vegetable-based diet, right? Because the ones which produce the least carbon footprint are like tomatoes, corn, cassava, which is actually tapioca, peas, bananas. So it's just a more vegetable-based diet, right?
I can eat groundnuts for dinner, the whole packet of the kacang.
I'm sure that's best for you either.
Basically, don't eat anything in excess when you're talking about health. But I think there has also been some research to suggest that we don't actually eat enough nuts in our day-to-day diet as compared to the other parts of the food chain. Because, you know, the traditional food pyramid has been subverted, right? So that's kind of gone out the window. And there's a lot more research abounding to say that, okay, actually you should have this amount of this carbohydrate or this amount of fat. So nuts actually are supposed to, according to a lot of this research, make up a bigger portion of our diet than they do.
But the other thing we're supposed to avoid is food which is air freighted.
Air freighted?
Yes. So like the likes of your berries and asparagus, things which are brought in by plane, because that has high carbon emissions. So goodbye to your blueberries.
So the flight shaming has now extended
to food,
to the logistics sector as well. All right, good to know. But do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are heading into the 6:30 news now. But first, here's It's My Life by The Animals, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Such Great Heights by Postal Service, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shouning and Julian. Now, Goldman Sachs has been in the news this week, not for 1MDB, for an announcement made by its CEO, David Solomon, that the investment bank is not going to be looking at taking any company public unless that company has at least one diverse board member.
But there are exceptions, right? Because this doesn't apply if the company is based, I think, in Asia, Africa, or Latin America, or Middle East. So only for US-based companies, mm-hmm. it looks like.
But this is big, right? This is huge because this is Goldman Sachs rejecting business, possible business, just because the company does not have a diverse board.
I don't think they're really going to reject that much business because according to this article, every S&P 500 company already has at least one female board member. Mm. So tick that box.
So they're just doing something that that helps them actually by making this announcement.
Yeah, like it looks
making
good.
Themselves look good.
Yeah, when most companies already comply, right? Because I would imagine, especially in America, it would be strange if we couldn't get at least one female board member. But diversity here means not just female, right? I think it also means
gender diversity.
It means gender, race. It technically would mean sexuality as well, because this is the US that we're talking about. So for me, yeah, you know, it does seem like this is an easy win for Goldman because they don't exactly have to make a lot of sacrifice in order to make this announcement. But it'll be interesting to see whether they do eventually decide to roll it out to its other businesses in other parts of the world and how long it takes for them to do that, if at all. Because, I mean, if you talk about, you know, the other countries, where the other regions where this is not applicable, you know, Asia, Latin America, the Middle East, these are the places where all male boards are more of a problem. And you do see that lack of diversity in the top corporate leadership spaces. So, you know, there is another conversation to be had as well over whether or not this is, whether this sparks feelings of you being, you know, the token diverse board member.
Tokenism.
Yes. Right, yep. Tokenism.
It's a real problem, tokenism. But also very interesting from the article, this is from Forbes, saying that the research has shown that a diverse board results in more profitable companies, and that's a strong incentive to have a diverse board. I think, in fact, locally in Malaysia, the Securities Commission has a corporate governance monitor, which actually is not a rule, it's not a legal document, but it really encourages companies, listed companies in Malaysia, to head towards some kind of a diversity, and of course, also fulfilling the wider corporate governance call as well.
Yeah, actually, Malaysia is quite ahead in its game, in this game. I mean, if you look at some of the GLCs, because it was a 2018 budget, that made it a requirement for all government-linked companies and government investment-linked companies to have at least 30% women on their boards. So that's a requirement. And also then, like what you said, Julian, the Malaysian Code on Corporate Governance 2017, large companies are supposed to have at least 30% women directors on boards. I think we are more formal about these rules. I mean, we kind of stated it at a statutory level, but probably in US, there's no such thing. So it's up to the respective investment banks to kind of have a policy. But if you ask me, I mean, Goldman, come on, you could have done this years ago, right? It doesn't seem so strange. I mean, especially in the US, there's no lack of talent there. Yeah. It's just a question of whether you think boards in the first place have this reputation of being a boys' club, right? Because most of them are like your buddies, you put your close associates, friends. So that's
they
not
were
necessarily...
busy placing out sovereign bonds from third world countries.
Yeah, they were. Well, maybe DJ Soul, as he's known as our Goldman Sachs CEO, will bring a bit of color to Goldman Sachs and change the way things have been done.
Yeah, well, I think a lot still needs to be done. And even here in Malaysia, you know, we talk about the 30% club, right, which is what is generally called those 30% of women leaders. There were issues with the implementation of that as well, because I remember reading statistics saying that actually, while a lot of companies now do tick that box, if you look at the number of women actually holding positions, a lot of you see a lot of the same names and same faces appearing constantly over the boards, because there is the fact of the matter is there is still only a very small pool of talent at that level of leadership. So why is it so small? You know, why aren't we encouraging more women to rise up the corporate ladder?
I think there are attempts. I mean, Institute of Corporate Directors, right? Which actually I've done the breakfast grill with their CEO. One of their key initiatives is to get more women to be kind of board ready, right? And I think that's something that they're trying to identify all the women out there and kind of give them the necessary training
to get
there. You
guys should apply. I mean, you both of you are pretty capable people. You can send your CVs.
I don't mind the director's fees.
Yeah.
Sure, sounds like a great idea. We'll do that after the show.
Yeah.
Well, do let us know what you think about this. Is one diverse board member enough to make a diverse board? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few messages coming up for you, and then we'll be taking a look at the front pages of the newspapers. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Julian Ng. That was Lorelei by Fleet Foxes. Now, thank you very much for your comments on social media this morning. I think we've had a couple of tweets and WhatsApps. What have our listeners been saying, Xiaoning?
Well, we have this quite cute one from Stephen who says, you know, one suggestion to the two of us, three of us actually, including you, Julian, is to, you know, the two ladies should set up their own radio station and appoint themselves directors. Well, yeah, okay, if it only was that easy.
That sounds like a fantastic idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing, you got to steal all the customers.
Another thing to add to our post-show discussion.
Yeah, yeah, just put it on the list, right?
Yeah, actually, a lot of people are now thinking about other forms of stakeholders as board of directors, including employees, because the employees are underrepresented in boards. And in some countries, for example, Germany, the union representative or the employee representative actually sit on the board so that they have the interests of such stakeholders being promoted.
Yeah, they've made it compulsory, actually, at least one union rep, which makes sense because you do want a variety of voices, right? Because at the end of the day, if you have a variety of voices, then maybe the decisions made would be good in the long term, mm-hmm. not just immediate short term, because, you know, sometimes that causes companies to make decisions which where you can see immediate profit, but in the long term, it's bad.
Now, Mohan also WhatsApped in to say, nope, one is not diverse, it's a minority. More women's brains are needed. Tired of the men's brains at work. Which, I mean, it is one point, but I think also we didn't touch on the subject of age, right? So diversity of age on boards is also not necessarily a bad thing. Now, the conventional learning, particularly here in Asia, is though, of course, that the older you are, the wiser you are. Therefore, you know, you have to be like of a certain age to be able to sit on a board of directors. But I think this is in certain industries, this is starting to be subverted because
especially in tech.
Because I remember KPMG did a survey a few years ago. I think it was of independent non-executive directors, and they did find that the age of independent non-executive directors in the tech sector skewed a lot younger than in, say, your more traditional construction and logistics sectors, for example. So that can also be a good form of diversity because that offers you new... Basically, if you have people from different backgrounds and different walks of life, they give you a different outlook and different ways to grow a business.
KY Ho on carbon footprint. We don't need to give up our coffees just yet because the Americans are consuming more on a per capita basis. So they need to think about what they're causing, what kind of harm they're causing to the environment first before it comes to us.
But who's to say we can't take the lead when it comes to
because we don't want to give up our coffee.
For your own selfish reasons, yes. Right?
It's always about that, isn't it? The environment boils down to what you want to give up selfishly or what you don't want to give up. Yeah, it's all about that.
It's about the same with the sustainable clothing, right? Mm-hmm. You get the fashion companies to do it for you rather than you doing it. But in the headlines, of course, for the Straits Times today is... call for calm. I mean, it's all about the coronavirus and the fact that Singapore's got its 7 case, Thailand its 14 case. And of course, in Malaysia, I think this morning it's our
7 cases?
No, 7.
7, all right.
Apparently.
And Malaysia Reserve also leads with that, in fact, saying that the virus has punished equities, ringgit and crude palm oil, all the financial markets hit by the coronavirus. And Edge also talks about the unnerving of the investors as a result of this Wuhan virus.
Yeah, so The Star is the only paper that has gone with a different headline. So they've gone with a story of assets being seized from a drug kingpin. So these are assets worth 366 million ringgit. So their front page is drug lords stripped bare. Sina Harian has a WHO admits that they were mistaken in the threat levels of the coronavirus. And of course, the Harian Metro has not much mention of the coronavirus at all. Instead, they're talking about the drug kingpin. Oh, nope, they do have the Wuhan virus as well as an accident in Gurek and the toughest fire. So one has gone free and one has been ordered to surrender themselves.
What really catches my eye, the fact that this drug lord had shares worth 143 million ringgit. He was a mini fund manager, by the way, guys.
Wow. I think a better headline would be police on a high after capture of drug lord.
Well, yeah, that would be an interesting headline indeed for the front page of a paper, Julian. But that is all that we have for you this morning from the newspapers. We're about to head into the 7 o'clock news and then enter the business end of the morning run, so be sure to stay tuned. But in the meantime, here is Shake Your Moneymaker by Fleetwood Mac, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.